We want to call the Joint Committee, Joint Judiciary and Civil Law Committee hearing to order. Members and those in the audience, we will be having people in and out, members in and out, just because of the time and the point we are in session. There's other conflicts with the Ways and Means and the Property Tax Committee and some other committees meeting. So we also are holding this informational hearing on some judicial reform issues with the intent to find out and become more educated and learned about these issues with the potential of amendments. Otherwise, the bills can't move in the sense that they haven't made deadline. But we want to have this serve as a good opportunity for members to ask some questions, for proponents and opponents to raise issues of concern or support of why the bills are passed. And we'll first start with Representative Ron Szymanski's bill, House File 1536. While Ron's coming, going to the table, members, we had announced on the announcement that we would focus on about 30 minutes per bill. We did end up taking one of the bills off at the author's request and with some conflicts that he couldn't make. That gives us just a slight bit more time potentially, but for those in the audience, we have about 8 testifiers for and against on both bills. We're going to need to divide the time up to about 3 minutes per testifier. So understand when you come forward, you will have 3 minutes and you need to consolidate some of your statements. If somebody's said something already, just refer to that and either affirm or state your opposition to it. But if you can try to channel your testimony to your highlighted points, I'm just offering that suggestion at this point so you don't get up and spend a lot of time on something that you might wish you wouldn't have said, or use time up if you have other key points to make. And at the end, we won't be voting on these bills, but members, we need to use this as an informational time and a good time to start digesting these ideas if they were to move forward in the future or potentially ever be an amendment. So, Representative. Representative Grunhagen, I understand the judiciary members, there's enough for a quorum here. Representative Grunhagen, would you move to pass the approve the March 22nd, 2012 meeting minutes?
Yes, so moved.
Representative Grunhagen moves to approve the March 22nd, 2012 judiciary meeting minutes. All those that are on the Judiciary Committee that are here, in favor of that, signify by any discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails unanimously by the Judiciary Committee members. Representative Szymanski, welcome. And why don't you first tell us about your bill, and then we'll have testifiers come up. You can tell us who first is interested to testify.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 1536 is a bill that is a very straightforward bill, a very short bill, but it has a major impact on the judiciary. The bill has two components to it. The first is changing the mandatory retirement age for judges. In current statute, a judge would retire at the end of the month in which he reaches age 70 as a mandatory retirement age. This bill would give a little latitude in retirement, simply stating that the judge could serve to the end of the even-numbered calendar year after he turns age 70. In other words, he would serve out his term through the next general election cycle. And the intent there was that they would have an opportunity, rather than to retire in a term short of an election cycle, that a retirement would continue, fill out the year, and then create an opportunity for an open contested race for that judicial position. The other component of the bill is simply a repealer that would remove the incumbency designation on the ballot. And that is an issue that incumbency has been indicated on our ballots since 1982. And there's a concern that with the incumbency, it's an advantage to an incumbent judge in a contested race. And, you know, we like to consider that we have fair and open elections, and for that reason we're seeking to repeal the incumbency designation. With me this morning are several people that would like to testify on this bill, and at this time I would like to call Michael Harrison up to give his testimony on House File 1536.
And Representative Szymanski, there are, let me ask you, do you have one or two more primary testifiers and others that want to affirm support for what they say? And what I'm asking is, do you want to divide up the time differently for any of, is there some that want to, that you want to lay more groundwork and more proposal, or does everybody just, we'll just live, take 3 minutes?
Mr. Chairman, no one has contacted me personally about wanting to be primary testifiers on this bill. I will take them as they're listed on our agenda.
Very good. Three minutes is what we need to work with, Mr. Harris. We will let you know when there's a minute and 30 seconds left. Mr. Harris, welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for our taped record, and you may begin.
Okay, my name is Michael Harrison. I'm the Executive Director of Judicial Common Sense. The bill that I really wanted to testify on today was 1666, which was taken off the agenda, but I will, don't mind making a few comments on this bill, and it shouldn't take me more than a minute or two. We think it's a good idea to make the retirement age, let the judge finish out his term, or at least to the next election cycle. That way the voters have an opportunity to have an open seat and to continue the election process, instead of having what we normally do now, where there is a the governor makes an appointment, and then of course they go on to maybe 2-3 years later on to general. This way it gives the voters another opportunity to participate in the election cycle. That's all I have to say, and thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Very brief and to the point. Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
Chris Campbella, and then who's that? Bob Tetra, if you want to be on deck, ready to come, will help us.
All right, thank you.
Chris,
my name is Chris Kumpel. It's a Finnish
Kumpel.
Name.
Yeah. Very good. Sorry about that. Welcome.
No, that's fine. Thank you for having me this morning. Just wanted to say that the mandatory retirement age, that simple change to the language, does offer an opportunity for these judges to be able to offer people to be able to have a contested election. Without that retirement age change, it puts a lot of judges in an unfair position where they're forced into a vacancy filled by appointment. And that's unfair to those judges, because a lot of those judges probably don't even want that to happen. And so, again, this gives them the opportunity to make it through to an election cycle so that they can say, look, I'll be retiring, and now there's an opportunity here for someone to run for this position. And that fits in with our constitutional design for judicial elections. And that's something that is very important, and something that's very important to citizens as well. The incumbency designation is very important just based on our principles of free and fair elections. As a matter of principle, to designate on the day of election that somehow one person is more entitled to an office than somebody else is just, I feel, inherently wrong. On the day of election, the principle of free government is that everybody's a private citizen. Whether you're a legislator coming in and you've served 8 to 10 years, or if you just come in after your first session, or you've never served in the legislature, the ballot should recognize those persons equally. And if we have a system where legislators aren't recognized as incumbents for good reason, I don't see a reason why the incumbency designation should be made for the judges as well. And it also creates a higher opportunity cost for good attorneys to be able to run for these judicial elections. Then incumbency designation creates a barrier that's not necessary. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Kumpula. Representative Johnson, you had a question. Is it specific to this testifier? And we can come back to questions.
Specific to this testifier, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Go ahead. I'd like to keep flowing with testifiers and then write questions down if we can. But Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Assuming this doesn't open the barn door for a lot more questions right now, I'd like to open that discussion.
Open the window very slightly.
Very good. Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kumpula, I just was curious if you're speaking as a private citizen or if you're representing an organization. I could just give a little background who
Mr.
you are.
Mr. Kumpula, who you identify your name for the record. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, my name is Chris Kumpula. I am here as a private citizen.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Thank you, Mr. Kumpula, and you'll be around if there's other questions I expect might arise as after the testimony. Bob Tetra?
Hello. Yes, my name is Bob Tetra. I actually say it. We're dumb Frenchmen. We don't know how to pronounce our own name. So anyhow.
Just one second. Mr. Nathan, Dale Nathan will be on deck. So go ahead, Tetra. Mr. Tetra.
Tetra.
Yeah. Okay.
Can you hear me? Am I
we got
coming
it.
Through?
Yep.
I'm a sort of a political activist. A member of the recent member of the Senate District 56 in Woodbury, and now member of Senate District 53, and also the deputy chair and treasurer of the 10th Judicial District Evaluation Committee. We conducted a survey at two venues last summer, the Woodbury Days and the Washington County Fair, and what we did simply was to ask people. This gets into the next legislation, but one of the things we did do is ask about their voting, whether they wanted to vote for their judges or have them appointed. But in the course of conducting this survey, we also talked about incumbency because we had the bills available and we were showing them, and people generally felt incumbency was not helpful. It either turned them off or on, or they either said, yeah, I'm going to vote for the incumbent. It didn't give them any information. So it was something that, in general, they felt probably should not be on the ballot. So they'd rather see the judges. So that's really all I have to say on this. I'd like to also testify on Representative Anderson's bill. But
very good. That'll be next.
That'll be next. Any questions from anyone about this? Was a very informal thing. We were there at the, we were there for a couple days at each venue, and we just sort of asked, and we had them talking to them a lot and showing them the bill. So, any questions? I'd try to answer them.
Very good, Mr. Tetra. We'll be opening it up for questions, more committee discussion after all the testifiers. Mr. Dale Nathan and John McGrath, you're on deck. Mr. Nathan, welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record, and we'll let you know when there's 1 minute left and 30 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dale Nathan. I'm appearing here both as a private citizen and as a representative of the Coalition for the Protection of Parents and Children. My main point is that what you are looking at is a statutory change, not a constitutional change. This is a change to an existing statute, 490.121. And what this change does is open up the election of judges. Our Constitution says in Article 6 that judges shall be elected by the people that they serve. This particular bill says that judges will retire in the general election year after they reach the age of 70. That means that the general election year will feature a competitive open election selected in the normal process, that is with primaries that designate the remaining candidates, typically two, and then the election takes place, and the candidate who best impresses the people and best communicates that person's views and principles is probably the person who's going to win the election and fulfill our constitutional mandate that elections of judges shall be by the people. And that means that judges will be accountable to the people, and they will have to be responsible to the people, and that's the way our democracy works best. That's all I have to say on this bill, which I highly recommend, and I thank Representative Szymanski for having me as a witness.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Representative Lesch, to this specific desk. I thought. Okay. Mr. Nathan, thank you. John McGrath next, and then Nancy Haas on deck.
Thank you. My name is John McGrath. I'm a parent and victim of the Minnesota Family Court System and a member of the Minnesota Coalition for Parents and Children. I'm just going to briefly read to you a very short letter that my daughter wrote.
Go ahead.
Mom and my brother kept saying, "You better come home." They told me to say, "I promise I'll come home tonight." I didn't say it because I was going to stay at Dad's. They kept intimidating me. Mom told my brother to say why he wanted me to stay. He said because he was lonely. Before I left, Mom said she'd burn all my stuff in my room if I don't come home. She laughed as if it was a joke. I'm afraid of what else my mom might do to me because she's been yelling and getting angry a lot. This note was included in my appeal to the State Court of Appeals, and I received a response from the State Court of Appeals recently that is nothing but a lie. They ignored endangerment. They ignored the truth. They claimed that I did not cite law. This is the kind of thing that goes on a regular basis in the courts of Minnesota. I don't know if any of you are aware of the Minnesota Corruption Report Card. And under the area of judicial accountability, we received an F. This is a travesty that has been going on for many years in this state. There are more lives destroyed by the judiciary in this state every single year than cancer destroys. My children are victims of corruption and abuse. And if that letter doesn't qualify as endangerment, then we are in a very, very sad state. We need these reforms, and these are just the beginning of the reforms that we need. And you all are responsible for taking action and stopping this horrifying experience that hundreds of children in Minnesota go through every single year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. Judge Thompson on deck, Nancy Haas, welcome. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Nancy Haas, here on behalf of the Minnesota District Judges Association. With respect to House File 1536, I'm just going to cover the portion related to mandatory retirement, and then I'm going to turn it over to Judge Thompson to talk about the incumbency piece. On behalf of the Minnesota District Judges Association, we have long been open to the discussion on changing the retirement age, and I know Representative Szymanski and I have had conversations about that. I think the point for today from us, though, is that we view this as a retirement issue and not an election issue. Our recommendation would be to you to think about this in terms of moving it to an age. So right now the retirement age, mandatory retirement age, is 70. We would like to treat all judges similarly, so moving it to a 72 or 73 is a better way to address that issue. Obviously, setting the right age is difficult. It requires objective and empirical data that will support a policy of ensuring that we have hardworking, competent decision makers on the bench. Just to give you a little bit of history about where how judges have retired related to the age 70, a relatively few number of judges have retired or have chosen to stay on the bench until 70. Since 1986, there have been 55 judges who have retired as a result of reaching 70. Out of 436 retirements, resignations, deaths, or other reasons that resulted in a judicial vacancy. That is a rate of about 12.6%, taking mandatory retirement over the 26-year period. There's also some indication that the rate is going down, with 29 of those 55 mandatory retirements incurring in the first 11 years, 1986 through 1996. Of course, as with any group of workers, the reasons for leaving the bench vary, including death, moving on to other pursuits, family obligations, health, or simply because of a desire to retire. So in summary, we just ask that you consider that the changes for judges' retirement age be done in the context of pensions and ensuring a competent bench and not as part of an effort to promote judicial elections. I think we'll have that part conversation a little later. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Haas. Judge Thompson and then Judge Warner behind next. Judge Thompson, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jeff Thompson. I serve as a district judge in Winona, and I'm the assistant chief judge of the 3rd Judicial District. With me, I assume you all know Nancy Haas. With me is Nancy Haas and Assistant Chief Judge Tracy Warner from the 2nd Judicial District. The chief and assistant chiefs of the judicial district are elected by their fellow judges in their districts to serve as the administrative authority for that district. We are here on behalf of the Minnesota District Judges Association. For the past 154 years, the people of the state of Minnesota have been refining the Minnesota system for selecting and retaining judges. During the Minnesota Constitutional Convention in the summer of 1857, in the wake of the Dred Scott decision, the delegates debated the advantages and disadvantages of a system of electing judges and a system of appointing judges. The convention set the balance on the scale of these two competing weights. We have watched and debated ways the balance needs to be adjusted. The question is whether or not some adjustment is needed. And it's not for us as judges to decide where that balance is set. That is a decision for the legislature, the executive, and ultimately the voters of the state of Minnesota. We are here today to provide information and to answer questions. I have summarized our system in an article entitled Choosing Minnesota Judges, which I have offered as an exhibit for this committee hearing. I have also offered another exhibit, The Foundation, if you will, the constitutional foundation of the Minnesota system. Imagine, if you will, your doctor's scale. The incumbent designation is one small weight in setting this balance. The Minnesota Supreme Court has, on three occasions, constitutionally validated the Minnesota system of selecting and retaining judges. The legislature has the power and authority to provide voters in our elections for judges information as to which judge is the current office holder. This is done by the incumbent designation for judges on the ballot. It is one adjustment, an adjustment that has been in place since 1949 for 63 years, my entire lifetime. Is there a real need to make this adjustment? That's a question for the legislature to answer. But I would like to quote Peterson versus Stafford. This was a 1991 case, a case decided by Supreme Court justices who were not going to be running for election anymore, and a retired judge specially appointed, in fact, the father of my colleague, Tracy Warner, Judge Harold Schultz, for whom I acted as a law clerk when I was in law school at William Mitchell. Peterson versus Stafford says, in part, the need for a competent, impartial, and independent judiciary creates, however, the potential for conflicts of interest when the judicial office is an elective office. These potential conflicts arise between the demands of an election process and the judicial impartiality required to decide cases free from political maneuvering. To counter this potential conflict, the 1912 legislature decreed that elections for judicial office be nonpartisan. It seems clear that Minnesota has adopted its own middle-of-the-road approach to judicial selection. The open election process has been retained, but with a quasi-retention feature which simply informs the voter who the incumbent candidate is and who the challenger is. This arrangement acts as a check on the gubernatorial appointment process by keeping the ultimate choice with the voters, while at the same time recognizing the unique independent nature of the judicial function. As far as I can tell, having been involved now in judicial elections as a member of the MDJA Elections Committee for the past 5 years, as far as I can tell, Minnesota's system is unique. It came about as a result of a 1948 constitutional convention where the conventioners recommended a Missouri system of retention elections, the system in Representative Beard's bill. Instead, we have the legislature has decided we will have an incumbent designation. If we need to change that designation, you need to decide why, and if that balance is changed, what the unintended consequences and unanticipated influences might be. The MDJA is against the change of the incumbent designation.
Thank you, Judge Thompson, and welcome, Judge Warner. Please identify yourself and your testimony.
My name is Teresa Warner. I'm a district court judge in St. Paul, Ramsey County, serving in my 15th year. I'm currently assistant chief judge in Ramsey County. I have no additional comments on Representative Szymanski's bill. I will testify on House File 1474. My comments would be repetitive. Just thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee for having us here, and we will be available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Warner. Representative Szymanski, do you have any other testifiers?
No, Mr. Chairman. But, Mr. Chairman, do you want to call anyone else from the audience? Well, we would limit the testimony.
There's anyone who'd like to speak either for or against House File 1536, please come down and identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, I believe Mr. Tim Kinley is here.
Welcome, Mr. Kinley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, legislators. My name is Tim Kinley, past president of Remember Kids and Divorce Settlements and a member of National Coalition for Men. And they are supportive of this bill. Our kids of Minnesota changed their emphasis from family law to judicial reform when we sat in courtroom after courtroom and heard judges say, I don't have to follow the law. And when the appellate court has upheld that they don't have to follow the law. And we think this is a much needed reform. I also have a cable show called Speechless, which emphasizes family law reform and judicial accountability. And I've filmed a number of these hearings and a number of community events talking about judicial reform. I've filmed debates between judges running for office. And the one thing that really sticks out in my mind, and to a person that I've been able to talk to that runs for judge or won't run for judge, and specifically let's deal with Washington County, where there's 24 lawyers running for an open seat, when there were 17 unchallenged judges, incumbent judges, on the ballot. And I asked a number of these people running for this open seat, why didn't you run against an incumbent judge? I mean, your odds are 5% right now, but you're getting through where your odds will be 50% against an incumbent judge. And to a person, and this is known in the legal community, they say that incumbent designation is too high of a hurdle to overcome. It really decreases my chances. And second of all, if I go before that judge, I'll be punished. Okay. That's what they say. This is known in the legal community. I mean, it's not people may not know it out there, but in the lawyers, this is what they talk about. This is what they say. Now, few judges retire at age 70, and there's a reason, because there are unwritten codes in the legal profession, in the judiciary. One of those is you don't run against an incumbent judge. And Judge Thomas Armstrong, in his defense to the Board on Judicial Standards, when a complaint was filed against him, said this very thing: when I ran against an incumbent judge, I won, but I was punished. Okay, the Supreme Court judge sat down with me and said, we will not talk to you, we will not help you out. Okay, and then later, because of acquaintances, got to know each other. And so the other thing, this is not simple information. This is huge information on a ballot. And there shouldn't be anything on the ballot as far as incumbency, the word incumbency, that benefits or harms the judge. It just shouldn't be there. It's giving information. That's the job of the judge or the person running for that office, to get the information out to the community, to let them know where they're at. And there shouldn't be this. It's not simple. It's very complex. So there are, oh, and also, if you retire, one of the unwritten rules, again, is for judges that are approaching this age 70, they are told, look, if you retire now, we'll give you the retirement benefits, because in our Constitution, in our statutes, judges, retired judges can be appointed. Okay, so the judicial community wants judges to be appointed, okay, rather than elected. And if you retire early, we'll make sure you get some of retirement judgeships. And that's what's going on. May not like it, but that's the truth. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kinley. Is there anyone else who would like to speak for or against this bill? Representative Lesh.
I have a question for Mr. Chair, the gentleman who had the report that he cited about the corruption level on the bench, who testified earlier. If you could come up, Mr. Chair.
Mr. McGrath?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McGrath, could you cite again, what was this report that cited Minnesota as having the worst corruption level on the bench?
Can I grab the paper?
Well, no, you don't need to grab it, just if you could cite it.
Well, I can cite that it's done by an organization, nonprofit organization, that that looked at every state in the country, and talked and judged the potential for legal corruption based upon the failure of the state's legislature and judiciary to police themselves, to properly pass legislation, to provide oversight and accountability to the judges. Various factors were considered.
Well, thank
Representative
you.
Lesh.
Mr. Chair, then, do you support removing the incumbency designation from the ballot?
Absolutely.
Okay, Mr. Chair, then, my question is, I can't figure out, you'd think that if it were knowledge that Minnesota had the worst corrupt bench, that you would want to keep the incumbency designation on there, because people would know that our judges are all corrupt, and therefore throw the bums out kind of thing, which comes by every year. So you think you should support that then, right?
Mr. McGrath.
Mr. Lesh, can I ask, are you an attorney yourself?
I am.
I knew that. And I'm really, you know, appalled at the fact that we have such an obvious problem with the judiciary in this state, and with the legal community is involved as well. And lives are being destroyed. These are crimes of humanity that are happening. My son's life has been destroyed by the liars and thieves and corruption in the Minnesota family courts. It happens in the criminal courts as well. And the reason it happens in those two areas most often is because you have innocent victims. You have victims who cannot defend themselves, whose credibility has been, you know, shown to the public as non-existent. And it's all done for money.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Sir, and I appreciate your passion for your family and for your son and your perspective on how you were treated in the court system. And you told me your story. Let me tell you a brief story. One of my first years as a lawyer, I had a judge who was on the bench, for a long time. He decided he was going to treat me like a law professor treats a first-year law student. Intimidating, rude from the bench, in one of these efforts that you're going to put the thumb screws to a certain new lawyer and break them in. I thought it was inappropriate. I thought it was inexcusable. There may have been some more senior people that got a chuckle out of it, and, you know, I learned my lesson, and that was fine. it still irritates me that someone could act that way from the bench. And I will tell you what, every year since then, when an opportunity came up and someone ran against that judge, I voted for the person against that judge just because I thought that judge acted inappropriately. That was my opportunity to have a say against who that judge was. And you know what? 89% of the public or more didn't agree with me because they didn't have that same experience with that judge. So it seems to me your issue is you got to be convincing more people. If that report is accurate, then everyone should know and everyone would agree. But you felt like you got a raw deal from a judge. I felt like I've got raw deal from judges. But in this constitutional system, you got to be able to convince everyone else that they're getting a raw deal too, and you're just not passing the test on that. So you can say it's because I'm a lawyer or because I'm arguing this way, but it's the way the Constitution was set up and it's the way our system was set up. You got a task in front of you to convince more people of your peers. You're coming up here, you're making the pitch, and it's not washing up here either.
Mr. Lashman,
Mr. McGrath, if I could direct your comments to the chair, if you would.
Okay,
you.
Mr. Chair, this is standard protocol coming from those who are part of the problem, whether it's the judicial system or the legal system. When you have no oversight, when you have the fox watching the hen house, when you have millions and millions and millions of dollars that are being made by the people in control, this is nothing more than an organized crime syndicate. It operates in exactly the same fashion. And you can silence the victims. I could line up victims here for days that would be willing to tell their story to Mr. Lesh and to you and everyone here. But you aren't willing to do that, and the judiciary doesn't want you to do that. They have absolute power, and they are overseen only by their peers. And this is a travesty of humanity that is bigger than any other issue in our community and in our society. The judiciary is corrupt from the top down, and it needs reform. And this is just the very first step, hopefully, in many judicial reforms so that they have independent oversight, and they are held accountable, and they are not put on any other level. This is equality is what this country is about. We should not be providing immunity to judges. That's ridiculous. We should not be providing immunity to guardians. It's absurd. Is this a country of equal rights or not? It is the legislative responsibility, the legislature's responsibility, to provide oversight and accountability to the judiciary. That's what's in the Constitution. And that's what's wrong with this state and this country. And we need reforms, and we need them now. And we need judges to be held accountable. If you're not familiar with, judges are human beings. They aren't special people. You may be familiar with the judge down in Texas who beat his daughter. Did you hear anything from any judge in Minnesota about that? Should they not have been calling him out? What about the judge in Pennsylvania who was making millions of dollars by sentencing juveniles into his buddies' for-profit jail system? You need to get over it. You need to understand that anyone put in a position of authority is bound to abuse that authority if you do not hold them accountable.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. To your comments, I would like to point out your comments regarding not airing these concerns. We are having an open meeting today that is open to the public.
Mr. Chair, my name was mentioned, so I'd like to respond briefly. I just by way of closing comment, I still can't understand, if it's this obvious, there's this much corruption, why you wouldn't want incumbent to remain on the ballot, so it belies the entire argument. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesh.
Point of information, Mr.
Representative Grunhagen.
I believe the report that the testifier referred to is corruption risk. In other words, it's not saying the courts are corrupt, but the risk of corruption were scored an F. And you can access it on the internet, and it was done by an organization. But I'll just share one quick paragraph. It says, conclusions of this study that graded Minnesota the potential for corruption risk. Okay, that's what it scored. And it states, in state law, areas in state law include an exemption for judges from the requirement to file statements of economic interest, otherwise known as asset disclosure. This is an area of potential corruption that should be created. As a result, the public is not aware of potential financial conflicts of interest. Additionally, the governor appoints most judges, but there is no process in place to evaluate the performance of judges who are up for retention or re-election. These issues and lack of an accountability, which is what the testifier said, appears to make the judiciary ripe for reforms in the state of Minnesota. So again, the report card didn't say we have a corrupt system, but it did say we need reforms because there is a high risk of corruption in our judiciary.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And I would like to make sure our questioners and testifiers, we do want to stick to the bill. It's House File 1536. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really applaud Representative Lesch's comments and Representative Grunhagen's. I think that's kind of the nuance that we need here. And in some of these judicial reform hearings, I guess what troubles me, and I have my own bill that I've been collaborating with Representative Beard on and others for a number of years, but the point is, I think we just have to be really careful here. I understand Mr. McGrath and Mr. Kinley and Mr. Nathan and others are very passionate about this, but I think we have to be very careful going forward at this hearing and others to confuse, you know, we have a lot of litigants who don't like the outcomes, but that is not the same as corruption. And I just really hope that going forward, I don't care where anyone is on these issues, that we can really distinguish here. Because you lost in court, doesn't no wait just let me
no comments from outside the committee.
I just hope going forward that we can distinguish that. I get the mailings. Mr. Nathan is very prolific. He sends out at least a couple a month, and they all are centered on court cases that he or his clients lost. And that's fine. You can make the argument that the judge got it wrong. We have two layers of review in the state. We have a Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court, and possibly the U.S. Supreme Court if it's a issue of federal or constitutional significance. So two or possibly three layers of review. The point is, and I'm not making a judgment about any particular case, and it could be that all of Mr. Nathan's clients, or it could be that Mr. McGrath or Mr. Kinley or others were done wrong, and that there were really bad decisions on the law. But that is different than alleging corruption. Corruption, to me at least, just kind of the common sense term, implies that someone's on the take, or someone is making a decision that they know to be wrong, or that someone is doing something somehow illegal. But just making the wrong call, the subjectively wrong call, or ending up on the wrong end, while it may be worth redress, is not corruption. That's not corruption. And I think we get a disturbing intermingling of those terms here, which implies something that is not there. We may have a judge in a particular case, or even in a pattern of cases, we may have judges, I don't know the answer, who are making the wrong call. But I think we really have to refrain from calling that corruption and alleging that because someone decided a case the way, or the outcome came out the way that we don't want it, that somehow that means that the judiciary, the entire judiciary from top to bottom, is rotten and corrupt. I that's a real stretch, and I just hope we keep those two things separate.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Judge Thompson, would you be willing to answer a brief question, sir? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Judge Thompson, you seem to have some background on the history of the issue before us. What is the origin of the incumbency label in the first place? Why was it placed on the ballot?
Mr. Chairman?
Judge Thompson.
In 1948, there was a constitutional convention, and the constitutional convention recommended to the legislature that there be a constitutional amendment to go to retention elections. The Missouri system is how that is shorthanded. the legislature responded by leaving the issue as the combination, and the Minnesota Constitution is pretty clear. There's a combination. It's in my report. Judges shall be elected, Section 7. Section 8 says the governor shall appoint in the event of vacancies. That's been the case since the Constitutional Convention in 1857. In 1857, the committee recommending the Article 6 recommended that judges be appointed. The first motion was to change that to elections. Coming out of that was the combination we have now. Elections, and then in the event of vacancies, appointments. The legislature in 1949 tweaked that a little bit by saying we're going to keep the election, vacancy, appointment balance, but we're going to add the incumbent designation. 1949, my entire lifetime.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Judge. And you referenced unintended consequences of a change in that regard, and what are you suggesting as unintended consequences?
If I knew what the unintended consequences were, I'd certainly be happy to tell you. But the concern is, just like on a kaleidoscope, we have a focus now that we've worked on for 150 years, focusing on getting good judges, and I would simply say that by any objective term, Minnesota has very good judges. Our symbol is the scales. We have to balance. We have a focus now to get good judges. A little change in that kaleidoscope can totally set off brand new pictures. We don't know how that's going to turn out. We do know that we've got this balance now. The question is, really, has Republican Party versus White affected that balance? And we don't know. I don't know, based on what's happened since Republican Party versus White 2002, that there's been a major effect on judicial elections. And until we know more, I'm suggesting maybe this is not the time to make an adjustment.
Thank you.
Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, just more of a comment than a question, but I haven't been convinced of how these bills would change anything. I guess I'm not ready to envision a court system in Minnesota that's corrupt from top to bottom. I don't believe that to any extent. I mean, there's problems, just like there is in my profession of police officers and lawyers and priests and everybody else. You're always going to find some bad eggs, and there's been judges that made bad decisions, and we've given this a good airing over the last few months, but it seems to me, I had the same opinion as Representative Simon, I think, is that the airing of these cases have been interesting, but if you go to court after court after court and you lose, no way means to me that we've got a corrupt system or something bad has happened. You've just gone through the system and lost. And it's probably unfortunate, but when I examine these bills, I don't know how either one is going to fix that system, how we're going to get more honest judges, whether they're appointed or elected. And I don't think there's any proof, really, either way, that elected judges or appointed judges, either one gets into more trouble, because we've had, you know, trouble with elected judges just as much. I mean, the appointment process seems to work. So anyway, although I sympathize with the stories that we've heard, and they're very interesting, and there is probably corruption, you know, prorated as there is in any professional field, I just don't know how these bills are going to solve it, and no proof has been brought to me yet where these would really demand that big a change.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Just to remind members, we have this is an informational hearing. We have one other bill we want to be sure to give adequate time to. So we have two more representatives on the list, and we'll go through those. And I'm sorry, three more, and then we'll move on to the next bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if it to this testifier or to Nancy Haas, but how many other states have the incumbency label on the ballot?
Mr. Chairman?
Judge Thompson.
My law clerk has Googled this, and I'm led to believe there are about four other states, so there'd be five altogether. But it's different in those other states. Some of those other states have different systems. Minnesota's system, as far as I can tell, of having a combination of elections and appointments is unique with the incumbent designation.
So, Mr. Chairman, members, just like to point out that this is pretty rare to have incumbency on the ballot. Most of the other states don't have it on their ballot. And then, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, why do you think judges want to keep the incumbency on the ballot? Because do they feel that this is an advantage to the judges in being reelected?
Judge Thompson.
Mr. Chairman. The Minnesota District Judges Association was initially considering retention elections about 5 years ago. I can tell you that the membership of the MDJA is so totally divided on that that we decided we're not in a position to make any kind of recommendation. But we did agree on certain principles, and one of the principles is that if we've got this current system, that this system has worked well enough for a human system for the past 63 years, and we don't think it should be changed. If you're going to change it to retention elections, we have a recommendation for that. It's an exhibit in my choosing judges article.
Representative Anderson.
So, Mr. Chairman, there have been other people that have testified before. Sorry that Greg Wersel couldn't be here today and other people, but it tends to be that the incumbency label does give an advantage to the incumbent judge, possibly 60-40 in favor of the incumbent judge just by having that incumbency label next to their name.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Cornish, I appreciate your comments, and I agree, and this certainly is an issue that we bipartisanly should try to kind of tamp down the, you know, kind of the extraneous issues here and try to focus. And so I do appreciate your comments. I had a couple of questions I could ask Judge Thompson. I was also going to ask Nancy Haas, but Judge Thompson, I'd like to know from your point of view, do you believe that we have sufficient oversight of judges in this state? And, you know, I'm not thinking, like Representative Cornish, I don't believe we have any kind of rampant corruption or anything like that, but I think there is a genuine concern about whether the public can have confidence in what we have now. And just to give you a little background on where I'm coming from, I've sort of long observed that within judicial districts, as you said, we have a chief judge who's elected, but the chief judge doesn't provide any supervision of the other judges that I'm aware of. Maybe I'm wrong. But you're there as an administrator. But for instance, even little stuff that most employees would experience, like if you're consistently late or if you're rude from the bench, kind of who is there to say to that judge, you know, you got to clean up your act? So that's one of my concerns. Do you think we have that kind of supervision? And is there supervision, you know, short of a full-blown complaint and that whole system that we do have, is there something more that you think we should be doing?
Okay. Judge Thompson.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Representative Liebling. Still representative, isn't it? Okay. I think judges are the most accountable public officials in the state. And we're accountable for a number of reasons. One, our work, by and large, takes place in the public arena. Except for a few limited cases, all court cases are public. The public doesn't come all the time, but they're public. They're on the record. My court reporter takes down everything. It would never even occur to me to ask her to change anything I've said, and even if I did, she's recording it, as well as reporting it on her stenograph. So it wouldn't be possible. We are almost always in contested cases, delivering written opinions, expressing findings of fact, explaining legal reasoning, and issuing orders. The judge's ability and competency in doing that is subject to review by the appellate courts. A judge's work ethic, diligence, and demeanor are constantly being evaluated by the judicial branch officials and employees at the state, judicial district, and courthouse level. I can't do anything without all my court staff knowing about it. In Winona, we've got three judges, about 12 people working on the court staff, and everything I say, smart or dumb, goes around like wildfire. As assistant chief judge, I can tell you that the chief judges and the court administrators are very interested in the judge's work ethic. The chief judge's ability is to do assignments. If judges aren't getting their work done, that is for the chief judge, and when the chief judge is not available, the assistant chief judge to deal with, and I have dealt with it. The judges are held to a high standards, and appropriately so. If their standards violate the canons of judicial conduct, that can go to the Board of Judicial Standards. And I will tell you, as a judge, getting an envelope from the Board of Judicial Standards labeled personal and confidential is a very serious matter. We hear that the people on the internet talk about judges are corrupt. I at one hearing heard a website called CarverCountyCorruption.com, and I read that, and I have been the subject of a couple internet websites myself. One is AngryJeweler.com. Feel free to look at that. And another is POWMadeAK47.com. That guy doesn't like me neither. But it has been said that the internet is the vanity press of the demented. I don't pay any attention to what comes on the internet. It has to have some other serious source. We have one woman sending us so much stuff through the internet that we have had to order her to stop because we just can't afford all the paper. So, lazy judges, bad judges, arrogant judges, no, we are accountable for that, and we take that very seriously, both at the board level, at the district level, at the courthouse level, and at the state level. Judge Warner is pulling on my sleeve, so I'll let her.
Thank you, Judge Thompson. Judge Warner.
May I be recognized just briefly to answer Representative Liebling's question regarding supervision? For about the past 6 months, I've been assistant chief in Ramsey County. I work very closely with our chief judge, Kathy Gearing. And I was off for a month having knee surgery, but on phone calls, I mean, I think she gave me about 3 days rest. But we communicate constantly. Judges can be asked to remove themselves from a case by a lawyer if there's a conflict. If that judge does not remove themselves, the litigants can petition the chief judge. The chief judge handles it, or the assistant chief. So there is supervision in that way. I have myself in 6 months never handled a hearing. Judge Guerin in 6 months probably has had two or three. It comes up occasionally with the 29 judges in Ramsey County where the chief judge is asked to remove a judge based on a conflict. Just yesterday, Judge Guerin and I talked to one of our colleagues because of an issue that came up. Very informal. Is it supervision? Does the chief or assistant have the supervision over the other judges? I think you know the answer is probably no. But there is, under the rules, the removal or the recusal first, then the removal by the chief. But I'll tell you, it does happen informally because 29 in Ramsey County, I'm not 23 in the 3rd District, we do have to work together. We are independently elected, absolutely, but we do have to work together. So there is some supervision, albeit informally, it does occur. I just wanted to direct my comments. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members and Representative Liebling, I'll call you back in, of course. But we do want to get this informational hearing done in the next couple of minutes, and we have one more comment after. Representative Liebling.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know these are important issues, and I know it's tempting. We could have a much longer conversation. I hope we will offline. But, you know, just following that, maybe just a quick yes or no. I mean, I'm understanding there is no formal evaluation process for judges, regular evaluation. Am I right?
Every term, a judge has to go through a performance evaluation questionnaire. Now, it's a little different than what a lot of people do. We have to, we are required to send out questionnaires about our performance, about our demeanor, about our competency, and about 8 or 9 other factors to the representatives or the lawyers who've been in front of us and to court staff. And it's all anonymous. Sometimes it's not too hard to tell, but I mean, it's all anonymous. It goes to the district court administrator, and then the district court administrator sends it to us. And there is an evaluation process. We're to use that, review it with another judge if we wish, and use that to improve our performance.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had another question, but I'm going to hold that one and so we can move on. Thank you for
thank
your indulgence.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Lesh.
I just want to say, Mr. Chair, in response to Judge Thompson's comments, that judges are already the most supervised public officials in the state. I couldn't agree more. And aside from some formal process, I can't imagine a more thorough process than what we currently have, which is every time they're officially doing their job, meaning on the record, they're supervised by one person who will like the decision and the other person who will not like the decision. And if there's enough reason to either appeal that or bring it up as an issue, that gets raised every single time. It's far more scrutiny than we receive here, because if for some reason as an elected official we raise a bill or an idea that someone doesn't like, we take the chance, well, it never shows up in the press. Maybe our constituents don't even hear about it. And every single time, in every single instance, there is someone in the courtroom with the judge who is in direct opposition to that decision. So I think it's a fantastic system already. That's all I want to say, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And thank you, Representative Szymanski, and all the witnesses for your testimony.
We're done?
We are done. This informational hearing. We have one other bill that we're going to be hearing. Did you have a final comment, Judge Thompson?
I'm just telling the
House file.
If I might,
Judge Thompson.
I would simply like to point out that we do not take a position on whether we prefer judges to be directly elected or appointed. But in response to another comment, the last two judges to be disciplined, Tim Blakely and Patricia Kerr-Karazov, to be suspended, were both directly appointed in contested judicial election, or directly elected in contested judicial elections. So that is not a cure-all. That's all I'm saying. It's not a cure-all. And let's take a look at the state of Wisconsin.
Thank you, Judge Thompson. You. Representative Szymanski, some final remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in closing comments, thank you to all the members of the committee for coming this morning and for sharing your comments and concerns. I appreciate all of your questions. In summation of the bill, as a layperson, not a member of the courts, I looked at the incumbency on the ballot as a way to direct information to the voters of the state of Minnesota so that they could learn more about the candidates on their ballot for judges, and for that reason I authored this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Szymanski. We now have an informational hearing scheduled for House File 1474. Representative Anderson, would you like to introduce that bill to us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to basically, in our Minnesota Constitution, which has already been stated before, we do have it in our Constitution to have judicial elections is what's currently in the Constitution. So this bill is basically trying to keep us in having judicial elections and having our judicial elections made better than the process that we have now. If you go to on page 2, lines 217, except for the 2nd and 4th Judicial District voters residing in the county in which the judge is chambered. So the idea in this bill is, except for Ramsey County and Hennepin County, we're going to change the judicial districts that judges will be elected to their county that they are chambered in. And then on line 2.22, in the 2nd and 4th judicial districts, it would make a change where the judge's judicial district would be an election precinct, and the Commission on Judicial Selection shall establish boundaries of judicial election precincts and assign a judgeship to each precinct in the 2nd and 4th judicial districts. Then the next change that we do is on line 2.33, each judge now must file, an individual must file a statement of economic interest with the board when they are going to be running for a judge. Then on line 3.39, the judge has filed a commitment, also a judge needs to file a commitment in writing to the Secretary of State by May 1st of the year of the expiration of the term of the office of each judge, stating that they're going to be running for that office. And then also there's two parts in my bill, also as well as in Ron Szymanski's bill, about changing it so when judges reach the age of 70, they don't automatically retire at that time, but that they will retire when it's going to be on a general election year. And so that's on lines 3.26, 3.27, and then it's also a mandatory retirement date is December 31st of the year of a general election after a judge has attained 70 years of age. So this would make it so that we would have less appointed judges and more judicial elections, letting the public decide on judges. There's also some changes to definitions. I don't know how much you want me to go over this, but there's a definition for a placeholder, prior office holder, qualified person, successor, and vacancy. And we're doing on lines 416 through 419, changing about filling a judicial vacancy. Whenever there's a vacancy in the office of judge, the governor shall appoint a placeholder to fill the vacancy until a successor is elected and qualified, and a successor shall be elected in the next general election occurring more than 1 year after the date of the appointment. And then basically the last thing that we do is that there are different reasons why a judge could retire early, and that's in here. And if they don't meet any of those qualifications for retiring early, that on line 6.4 through 6.8, there would be a partial forfeiture of their retirement annuity, and it could be reduced by 25% if they decide to retire early, if they don't meet some of the requirements of reasons why you could retire early. And that's basically the bill, members. And I have with me today Mr. Chairman Bon Clayton. He was we're not able to have Greg Wurzel here today. He was one of the people involved in drafting of this bill, and he had a conflict today. It would have been nice to have him here. But Bon Clayton is here also to kind of explain some of the reasonings behind these changes in the bill.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Good morning, Mr. Good morning. Clayton. Please introduce yourself for the tape. And we are running short on time already, so I asked you to keep your comments to 3 minutes if possible, and so that we can get the other testifiers before us.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bon Clayton, Chairman of the Republican Party's Committee for the 1st Judicial District. I don't know if some of you might know this, but each of the 10 judicial districts has an elected Republican judicial committee. And I'm the convener of all of those chairs that get together twice a month during a session. This bill is to promote elections. There are various things that do that. 1536 also is to promote, to enhance the idea of elections, which we think is a good idea. Elections are the way Americans choose their public office holders. First, the question of retirement in an even year, rather than the current statute, which says that the judges must retire at the end of the month after they turn 70, We change it to the end of the even year or after the election so that there will be an election rather than triggering 12% retirements, forced retirements. Obviously, there are 93% of the judges in Minnesota that are appointed initially, so it's not the majority, but it's a significant thing. 12% is not a small number. Now, with regard to the argument that was made earlier by a testifier on 1536, because this provision is in both bills, having an even retirement year doesn't make sense to me. Most companies don't have that kind of thing. You can't. The legislature doesn't have that. The state government doesn't have that. And to force retirement at a particular age is an entirely different issue. The second provision is to have counties, the judges elected by the counties in which they serve. The Constitution says, quote unquote, judges shall be elected from the areas in which they serve. The areas they serve, if anybody who's ever worked with a judge, is almost entirely one county seat. The voters in that county know them. Voters in the other counties don't know them, at least to the same degree. Since I'm running short on time, I want to say also that the interim or placeholder position is to eliminate the vacancies that most of the vacancies that occur, which result in appointments. We think that the argument again is that we need more elections. I think that's 3 minutes.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. I would remind the committee members that we will hold questions until the testifiers have completed their testimony. All right. Representative Anderson, you have next, someone next
Dale
on your
Nathan
list?
Dale Nathan wanted to be next.
Welcome again to our committee. Please introduce yourself once more and proceed with your testimony, keeping it within the 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One point I want to comment on with respect to 1474, I'd like to draw your attention to the concept of judicial election precincts. A part of this bill says that for the election of judges, we have a problem. For example, in Hennepin County, we have 60 judges, and typically they all appear on the ballot, and that presents a problem for voters. How can they know about 60 judges and know sufficient information about them? So we've introduced the concept of having a group of precincts become the judicial election precincts. So now voters in a specific group of precincts would have one judge to consider instead of 60. This is much, much more manageable, and it makes judicial elections far more important to the voters. So I want to introduce that concept. I want to tell you that with respect to getting voters information about judges, we know from Judge Thompson that there is an evaluation process, but voters don't know anything about the outcomes of these evaluation processes. And so one of the reforms that we have proposed is a system in Minnesota, like 14 other states, to have judge performance evaluations. That is a separate issue from this bill. The last comment I want to make is oversight of judges. We do not have effective oversight of judges, even though our Constitution says the legislature shall provide oversight of judges. Just as when you give any group of people unlimited, just as when you give any group of people unlimited power to do whatever they want, you need oversight to prevent abuse of that power. And that is another reform that the legislature should seriously consider. And that completes my comments, except to thank Representative Anderson for the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Representative Anderson, do you have another witness you want to call?
I guess we can follow the list. Bonnie Roy.
Good morning. Welcome to their committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Bonnie Roy, and I am just here to take a stand in regards to judge accountability. Many of the comments today that have been going back and forth in regards to, you know, judges being held accountable and that we respect them where they state. In many one of our cases, a lot of the judges are not following state statute and state laws in regards to our basically outcome of our cases. If that would be the case, none of us would be in the position that we are in. Laws are not being looked at in our specific cases, and we'd have definitely documents that show that. Judges need to be elected by the people and held accountable for their actions, especially when state statutes and laws are not being abided by. And this, again, could be argued by many, but we have facts in every one of our cases that they are not being looked at and respected. The Minnesota Constitution states, Article 6, Section 9, that they need to be held accountable and need to answer to the people for their wrongdoing, rather than avoiding and undermine this huge injustice. I am a victim, like many in Carver County, where the judges are out of control and irresponsible to parents and children. This is not a matter of being right or wrong, but in our situations, if there would have been accountability with their actions, we would not be in the position just as such as McGrath and many of us. Lives have been devastated by the wrongful actions of these judges. Judicial accountability needs to be enforced. This is bipartisan, and we need the legislative branch to take a stand for what is right and enforce the Constitution. We need judge performances evaluated by credible citizens to hold them accountable for their actions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And Representative Anderson, do you have another witness?
I mean, these are just the ones that you have on your list.
Okay.
So is Chris here?
Once more, welcome, and please introduce yourself for the testimony.
My name is Chris Kupla. Thank you again for allowing me to testify. Just a few brief comments. This is a little bit longer than the bill we're talking about previously, but there's some very simple changes that this makes. One that's very straightforward is requiring removing the exemption of judicial candidates to file a statement of economic interest. All of you have campaigned. You've had to file that paperwork. It makes sense that the judicial candidates would have to do the same. I think that's something that should be there. In the forfeiture of retirement annuity, it creates an incentive to help ensure that the retirements resulting in these appointments don't incentivize basically the use of those retirements for whatever reason to basically supersede the election system as prescribed by Constitution. And so I think that creating this incentive, financial incentive for judges to really assess the retirement, and there are exceptions into this bill as well, I think it's something that's very much needed. As far as the districts, that is something that honors the principle of constituency. The principle of constituency in representative government is very, very important. I know that many of you legislators maybe or maybe not would like, if you could trade your voters and you could have the voters of one of your colleagues' district vote for you and vice versa, maybe it would be a good thing. Maybe as many problems as you have in your own district, you won't want their district anyway. But the bottom line is that the constituents should be voting for the individuals who are meant to serve them. And this bill does a very good job of coming up with a very sensible way to solve that, making sure that it's done sensibly. It's a simple bill. It's a little bit lengthy, but it makes sense. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
For your testimony, Representative Anderson. Next on our list is Michael Harrison. Again, welcome and introduce yourself once more for the recording.
My name is Michael Harrison. I'm going to talk more about personally instead of my organization. I support this bill. I'm intrigued by the conversation today. A lot of you want to ignore that there's corruption in the judiciary system. But I quickly want to give a brief overview of my story. Judge Housie in Wright County.
Sir, we do not want to get into names and
situations. What happened in my case is that there is fabrication of testimony to justify the decision. in my divorce case. Unfortunately, last summer, last July, in the 10 o'clock news, I learned about the rape and molestation of my daughter. Because Judge Halsey, the judge wanted to give custody to my wife after knowing of her mental illness, her schizophrenia, which I rapidly fought against. That's what I fought against. Not to take the kids from her, but my concern for my children. And unfortunately, something bad happened. I tried to go when Judge Halsey was up for re-election.
I'm going to have to reprimand you.
Okay, that's what I'm getting to. When the judge was up for re-election last election cycle, I wanted, of course, to get him removed as Representative Lechstein. And unfortunately, most of the voters didn't agree with me. The problem that I have is the 10th Judicial District is a very broad district, so it was hard to go out and get information out and try to get this man. The second problem is trying to get somebody to run against him. So I'm very in support of this bill. I think it would make it very easy to go with getting people to run against these in a smaller area so that we can try to do what really should be done, and that's the process of voting off these people. Thank you for letting me testify.
Okay. All right. Next on our list is Bob Tatro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I introduced myself before on the previous, so I think you're kind of familiar. What we did is the 10th Judicial District was conduct some surveys at some venues. I mentioned the Washington County Fair and the Woodbury Days. And essentially what we were asking people is, you know, how do you feel about, do you want to vote for your judges or do you want to have them appointed? And we informed them also, as we understood it, that 93% or somewhere in that area of sitting judges at this time have come there by appointment. And this is because of the way the system works. Judges generally, whether it's designed or whatever, whether they have an understanding, as someone mentioned before, they retire, and then there's an appointment. So, and then with the incumbency label, they generally tend to stay where they are. People don't want to challenge them. So we conducted the survey, as I said, and this is the general public, people just passing by in these areas, and they 95%+ said they wanted to elect judges in contested elections.
Excuse me, Mr. Tatro, for those members of the committee that were not here to hear your previous testimony, would you please reintroduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. My name is Bob Tatro, and I'm a sort of a political activist from, at this time, Senate District 53, and formerly Senate District 56 out in Woodbury. And also, I'm the deputy chair, treasurer of the 10th Judicial District Evaluation Committee. I apologize. I just wanted to, in the interest of time, I assume a lot of people have been here and knew my previous introduction. I apologize for not properly telling who I am. And we did, as I said, conduct this survey, and we had the bills available, and we showed them, particularly with reference to Representative Anderson's bill, that what they would be doing is they would be voting in a local area, and they would have a chance to get to know their candidate for judge. And so this is an advantage. Otherwise, the 10th Judicial District comprises 8 counties, and, you know, it goes up to Sherburn, Rice, and this kind of thing. So at any rate, there was overwhelming support for elections and contested elections, and there's also a book out on this by Bono and Hall who say that contested elections are the best way to get interested in an election and the best way to come out with a good, accountable candidates. And, of course, they can talk about themselves. They're not going to tell how they're going to rule, but they can tell, you know, what their philosophy is. And I think with regard to, I heard a previous question from Mr. Chair, from Representative Liebling about, you know, how do we evaluate these people? Probably the best way is by good contested elections. It truly is. And this is a bipartisan issue. I mean, this isn't, you know, Republicans want this and Democrats don't. Democrats certainly do want contested elections. And it's been shown, and again, referring to the book, Bono and Hall, that the money is not a factor in this. Contested elections are good. They create more interest. They involve the public more. And they truly produce more accountable judges. And thank you for allowing me to testify. Any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
All right. Representative Lesch, can we hold the questions till the end of testimony?
Okay.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chairman, can we have one more testifier, Tim McKinley?
All right. Yes. In the meantime, Representative Drazkowski, we do have a quorum for the Civil Law Committee. Would you like to move the minutes of the last meeting of the Civil Law Committee?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any discussion to the minutes of the previous Civil Law Committee? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. All in favor of approval of the minutes, say aye. From the Civil Law Committee, pardon me. Say aye.
Aye.
All right. Opposed, say nay. All right. I think we passed them. All right. Please, welcome to our committee. Introduce yourself once more for our committee members and proceed with your testimony.
Tim Kinley, thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives, past president of Remember Kids and Divorce Settlements, also a member of National Coalition for Men, which is trying to end sexism and bias against men and boys, and I have a cable show called Speechless, which deals with family law reform and judicial reform and exposing the corruption that does take place, and I would agree it's not rampant, but it's there and it needs to be dealt with, and this is the body that's supposed to deal with that according to our Constitution. But according on this bill, I want to deal with the area of section 4, that's 3.31 and through 4.15, and there's a lot of definitions in this bill, and the purpose of the definitions here is because the Minnesota Supreme Court, in a number of lawsuits, and I wish the people that filed the lawsuits were able to come today, but they had court. Actually, one's arguing in the Supreme Court here in a couple hours. The Supreme Court was defining terms differently in different situations. So specifically, I know the word successor. In one situation, it was defined one way. In another situation, it was defined another way. But it's the same word in the same sentence, and so this defining these words, it helps the court and will clarify the language for the court as to what these words actually mean. And so I'm in favor of this bill and think it will just create more transparency for our judiciary.
Thank you. And next on our list is we have John McGrath. Is he still here?
No.
He's not here. Okay. Judge Jeff Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, if I might let Judge Warner go first.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Welcome once more, Judge Warner. Please introduce yourself for the committee members who have arrived late since your last testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Anderson. Good morning. My name is Teresa Warner, District Court Judge, Assistant Chief Judge in St. Paul Ramsey County in the 2nd Judicial District. I am going to direct my comments on House File 1474 to the early retirement penalty in the county election proposal, and then a couple general comments. First of all, the early retirement penalty, which would impose partial forfeiture of benefits for judges who retire midterm, which creates a need for a governor appointment, is simply fraught with legal and constitutional problems. There's no due process. It's not treating judges fairly or equally with any other elected officials. It really is a wolf in sheep's clothing. It's an election issue. I represent here today not only myself but the Minnesota District Judges Association. I am co-chair of the Elections Committee with Judge Thompson. The Minnesota District Judges Association is not opposed to a dialogue about moving the retirement age, about talking about that. Ms. Haas has addressed that issue. I won't repeat her comments. You've also had testimony at some point from Judge Bob Birnbaum, who chairs our Pensions Committee. We're more than willing to discuss the retirement age, but the Judges Association strongly opposes making the retirement age any penalties tied into an elections issue. They're simply two separate issues, and we feel very strongly that we want to continue the dialogue, but that they are separate issues. We'll continue the dialogue not only on the retirement age, but also on the election issues. Again, there are many, many legal and constitutional problems with the penalties, with the forfeiture of retirement no other agency that I can think of that has that, no other elected officials that have that caveat in there in any statute. As it relates to the county election proposal, I believe it was the early 80s, 1982, 1983, when there was that statutory change from the county court systems to the district court. Minnesota is now set up in 10 judicial districts. Hennepin County, the 4th district, Ramsey County is the 2nd district. My understanding and my brief research, again, it was done by myself, is that Hennepin and Ramsey were singled out as a sole judicial district based on population. It wasn't based on anything else. It wasn't any deference to the counties, except it was a population issue. But the other 8 judicial districts are multi-county. The idea of changing the district system to a county system, in a sense, ignores the fact that we are a mobile society, that judges, people, there's no walls around counties, and you deal with litigants in your judicial district, be it the 2nd, the 10th, the 3rd, you deal with people from all over the district. This proposal means that a judge could render a verdict against someone who doesn't have the ability to vote for or against that judge. Judges serve in multiple counties within the districts daily, sometimes weekly. This system or this bill doesn't recognize that, and it would literally impede people, affect people not being able to vote for judges who they appear before. In recognition of our time limits, I'll withhold the rest of my comments, which were just general.
Great. Thank you, Judge Werner. And Judge Thompson?
Nice to meet you.
Mr. Chairman?
Welcome, Judge Thompson. Please introduce yourself once more.
My name is Jeff Thompson. I am a district judge in Winona, and I'm the Assistant Chief of the 3rd Judicial District. Just have a couple brief comments on the redistricting or reconfiguring the voting area. One is that the Minnesota Constitution, Article 6, Section 7, says that they, the judges, shall be elected by the voters from the area which they are to serve in a manner provided by law. We are to be elected in the area we serve. In 1959, the legislature divided, I'm not sure about this, but I think at the request of the judiciary, the legislature divided the state into 10 judicial districts. And we need to think about how the judiciary is governed. Each of those judicial districts has a chief judge. Each of those chief judges serves on the judicial council. The judicial council is the administrative body that runs the judiciary. Frankly, I'm satisfied that if I was to run in Winona County, I'm popular enough that I could be reelected. But I don't serve just in Winona County. I'm not here to talk about judicial funding or the need for more judges or those things, but those are all issues. And because they're issues, in the 3rd Judicial District, our judges, including me, have to serve in other counties. I spent a week in Olmsted County, just last week or the week before. Time kind of flies when you're having fun. I have served in Steele County, Wabasha County, Maurer County. Our district is the 11 southeasternmost counties of the state. This is how we govern ourselves. With this bill, I believe there are constitutional issues that would allow me to say, I can't serve any place but Winona County. And is Winona County then going to be governing itself? Should we elect our own chief judge? Should we have a judicial council with 87 chief judges plus precinct judges? I don't know. But I just want you to think about that when you're considering this bill.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Judge Thompson. Nancy Haas? Nancy Haas passes. We'd like to reserve some time for questions, but if there was anyone else in the audience that feels compelled to testify on this bill, if you keep your comments very, very brief, We'll need to move along.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, R and R Family Centers. It's been a long time since I've been before judiciary when I did a lot more legal advocacy. However, I did want to raise a couple questions when I looked at this particular bill. First, as it relates to incumbent judges and the election so far, a few comments. I haven't seen anything in all the years as far as requirements of competency or being able to evaluate or having the voters even know about how a judge is. Usually when the judges are on a ballot, voters aren't informed as far as the background or competency levels of the judges, and they usually don't have a chance to investigate. There are judges that have unfair bias that results in harm, and unfortunately there are good judges who are retired at age 70 when we would like a way to keep them on. There's certainly a lot lost because there's no mentorship of these judges that are retired to be able to continue things, because I remembered when the battered women took years to educate judges on the issues of battered women, and so that is also lost. And at least I can say, and I don't know if there's any options, but I know when you were doing court with the judges and the advocates know how a particular judge is, there are options for removal, and I don't know if the voters have methods to do that other than what's listed here when they do find out that, you know, they made a wrong choice. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And the next testifier, please welcome to our committee, introduce yourself, and proceed with your testimony, and again, keep it very brief.
My name is Leah Bankin. I'm actually from Carver County, Minnesota. I am the original author of Carver County Corruption.com that Judge Jeff Thompson mentioned earlier. I just had a really brief testimony today. The judges should be elected by the people and accountable to the people for their actions. They should answer to the people for their wrongdoings. Minnesota Constitution says in Article 6, Section 9, that this is the way it should be. I am a victim of an out-of-control and irresponsible judge and judicial officials. I'm one of thousands of parents and our children who have been abused and even devastated by wrongful actions of judges. I do not think this would have happened if these judges had been elected by the people and were responsible to the people. We need to follow our Constitution. We also need to judge performance evaluations by credible citizens so we know how judges are doing their job.
Great. Thank you. Questions from the committee. We'll start with Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got questions maybe for Judge Warner and maybe Judge Thompson if they're still here.
Okay, on our list of questioners, we have Representative Lesh, Johnson, Cornish, and Liebling. Okay, Representative Drazkowski, you want to present your question?
Judge. Whoa.
Sorry. I'm just a little wobbly.
Reed's got a strong right arm there.
A little nerve, that's what it is.
Judge Warner, you were talking about the provision that, I'm trying to remember exactly how the provision works, but it focuses on, I'm trying to remember my question. You were talking about the provision that with whether the judges are, I'm trying to remember, what they're elected.
I did the county election proposal in the early.
Judge Warner.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. But the
yes, actually the early retirement, and that's what it was. What do you have any other proposals around that to get to the direction that the authors would like to go, and have you had discussions with them about that? You suggested that some of those were maybe not I don't know if you're saying they weren't legal or constitutional, or maybe wouldn't stand judicial scrutiny or something. But I'm wondering, you know, obviously there is a desire to move more towards electing judges and having more accountability to the electorate. Are there any other ideas that you have rather than those that that you criticized in the bill?
Judge Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm paging through. I'm trying to find Judge Bob Birnbaum from the 3rd District. I'm trying to find a copy of his testimony, and I'm not sure which committee. And Ms. Haas addressed that a little bit in her testimony earlier. We have the Minnesota District Judges Association has a pensions and benefits committee, very active. And what the proposal is, or the idea is to look at a particular age, to look at the retirement piece as solely that, as part of the pensions and benefits, not as an election issue. The idea, thank you, Nancy. The idea is to come up maybe with a particular age. I think Ms. Haas said perhaps either 72, 73. Look at a specific age as opposed to tying it in to an election. If you tie it into an election, there's no particular age. You're making it an election issue. MDJA's position is that it shouldn't be an election issue. It's more of a pension issue. That's basically what the MDJA's position is. Judge Birnbaum testified for the Senate Judiciary Committee on November 17, 2011, and we feel that MDJA feels that there's no objective empirical data that is out there to say, okay, this is the best way. We need a dialogue, and that's why that committee, chaired by Judge Birnbaum, very active and is willing to sit down and have that dialogue.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Judge Werner. Obviously, the desire is to what has been observed, as I understand, is you've got a situation, and I don't have the context in front of me, but where it just so happens that judges decide to retire in the frame of the window that provides for appointment.
Correct.
And that's what has been identified by the authors and proponents of the bill as the problem here, is that somehow magically the retirement just happens to fall in that window, and voila, we avoid the election process for those judges. And the desire of the proponents of the bill, and I'm one of those, is to bring about one that actually exposes that empty seat to the electorate rather than to the appointment process. Is your group of judges or your association of judges, are they opposed to moving in that direction to bring some sort of change around whatever that might be that would bring more of a preference or a focus on submission to the electorate to those folks rather than to what seems to have been the default here over time?
Judge Werner.
May I defer to Judge Thompson on this?
Judge Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would simply say that, and Representative Draskowski, you weren't here when I made my earlier comments, I believe. I would refer all members of the committee to my two articles, Choosing Judges, Choosing Minnesota Judges, and The Foundation of the Minnesota System. It is up to the legislature, the governor, and the voters to decide how judges are selected and retained. I don't think judges want to take a position on that, but we want to provide information. And the information is that from the early days of the Constitutional Convention, we have had a balanced system between elections on the one hand and appointments on the other. And we have adjusted that balance. In 1912, we went to nonpartisan elections. In 1949, we added the incumbent designation. What we're saying is the pension business should not be part of that decision. If you want more elections, there are ways to do that. A large group have actually, in 1948 and in 1973, there were two constitutional conventions that both recommended Missouri system retention elections. That would provide a public performance evaluation. The judge would run unopposed. The vacancy would be filled by merit selection. We're not advocating for that. What we're saying is the system we have now has been designed over 154 years, and we think any adjustments to that need to be very seriously considered.
Thank you, Judge Thompson. Representative Jaskowski, we do have other questioners that we are down to about the last 5 minutes.
Oh,
we do have to vacate this room for another committee hearing. So, Representative Lesh,
thank you.
Brevity is appreciated.
Mr. Chair, Judge Thompson, can you tell me the origin of the 70-year-old retirement age? I think my legislative history said the 1973 discussion centered around that. Why 70?
Judge Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wish I knew. I think in those days there was probably some concern that 70 or older people started to, you know, be less able. I don't think that's true now. But I don't really know. And frankly, back in those days, I wasn't really as concerned about being 70 as I am now.
I hear Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I, you know, when I was starting out as a lawyer, I was moving into the courthouse, and Judge Mary Lou Kloss was moving all her stuff out. She still remains very active, very sharp. I see her in church every Sunday, and I sometimes wonder why we capped her out at 70 years old. And then I'm sure there are those who think I've lost it already at 39, maybe earlier than that. But with respect to elections, my question would be for the author, Mr. Chair. Is it your intention, Representative Anderson, that this bill would move us to elections because of some of the other earlier discussion that there's a culture of corruption?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, the purpose of this bill is to keep it in line with how it's stated in the Minnesota Constitution. And in our Minnesota Constitution, we have judicial elections. So that was the goal of this bill, is that a lot of what's occurring today has been judicial appointments, and we're trying to get back to what's in the Constitution and making sure we have more judicial elections.
Okay.
Representative Lesh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, I appreciate that, but is part of the reason because you think there's a culture of corruption?
Representative Anderson.
My answer did not say that I do. No, there's a different bill that Glenn Grunhagen is carrying to address those types of issues. Mine is just focused on judicial elections.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh.
And one of the reasons I ask is because I envision a system where we had all elections, where there is a hesitancy to remove maybe the kindly aging judge who probably should have taken off a while ago, but no one who's going to take on out of respect, and even the voters are not going to take him out of respect, which would happen, and I think it happens around here once in a while, frankly. So would you see that as a risk of moving more toward an election-based system?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lesh, no, the purpose of this bill is just to have judicial elections. It's not trying to, I mean, there are probably things that we need to do and get the voters more informed as to the quality of the judges and those issues, but it's just trying to focus more on judicial elections and not appointments.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair,
Lesh,
I understand that.
We do need to move.
What's that, Mr. Chair?
We need to keep moving.
I just want an answer to the question, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Representative Anderson, maybe you'd understand it. Do you see my scenario as a risk for keeping judges on that should have departed, that there's a kindly old judge that is not taken out by an election and continues to stay on because we keep pushing further past a retirement age?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, that's not the issue in this bill. This issue in the bill is just to have it be about elections, and then whatever the voters say the specific issues are, the voters will determine the issues, not this bill.
Well, by way of closing comment, Mr. Chair, I'm generally a supporter of elections over appointment, and I know that, and I'm going to hold off on where I was going to go on that line of questioning because of the timing, Mr. Chair, but with Judge DeCourcy on the bench in Ramsey County, he said to me one time when we were talking about this retention, you know, what's wrong with an election? You know, it's getting supported by the people, and I'm in general agreement then, and I've opposed Representative Simon's bill in the past, but I do have a concern when we start playing around with the retirement age. That's all I wanted to say, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Does it concern you that the bills we're hearing this morning, the effect would be likely to politicize the judiciary and chip away at the impartiality of decisions made by judiciary. Is that a concern of yours at all, or do you think that's a good idea to push it in a more political situation where Democrats and Republicans are fighting hard for control of the judiciary?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I think the main focus of this bill is that right now we have very few contested judicial elections. It's like 93% or 90% of the judges are appointed. And so what this is trying to do is really just getting it back to being able to have contested judicial elections. And we haven't really talked about that they're going to be political, but I think the voters need to be more informed about where judges are at. We need more accountability for the judges. And I don't know that it's necessarily political. It's just how they're ruling, their performance, those types of issues, and making sure that there is a mechanism to hold judges more accountable by the public in judicial elections.
Okay. Anything further for Representative Johnson?
No, I mean, obviously it would politicize the judiciary, and I have serious concerns about that, but no further
thank
questions.
You. Representative Liebling, last question for today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the one I held from before, first I just want to comment real quickly that I appreciate that the real issue here is we have low information elections, and how can we best get more information to voters? And I appreciate that, Representative Anderson. I don't think that this district thing is really ready for prime time. I mean, I think there are a lot of issues with that, but I appreciate the attempt, which is to let voters actually know what they're voting on. So I think that's a good thing to be thinking of. My question that I put out before had to do with the retirement age, and I wanted to really ask, and maybe Nancy Haas or maybe the two judges, you know, why should we have a retirement age for judges at all? I've thought that for a long time, because we don't have mandatory retirements in other fields. And so anyway, that would be my final question.
Judge Warner, would you like to answer that one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would, in some respects, echo Judge Thompson's comments. I didn't do the research on the mandatory retirement age. I think it's like other professions, though, that do have a mandatory retirement age, that they've maybe at the time they felt that beyond that age, judges should not serve. You know, I don't know. I don't have, you know, I'm nowhere near retirement, so I haven't even thought about it. I'm not getting close to the 70 quite yet. I just don't see the need to, though, change that retirement age if it's tied to an election issue. I think there's room to discuss it otherwise, but tying it to an election issue, I have some concerns. So, thank you. Mr. Chair, if I just may, I appreciate the opportunity, members of the committee, to be here today to be able to address you. It would have been very easy to take my community court calendar this morning, sit in my office, but the MDJA, personally, I feel that a fair, independent judiciary that the public has confidence in is absolutely necessary. And the stories, some of the stories that we've heard today are heart-wrenching, are sad, but MDJA and judges in general want to work to serve the public and do their best. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Judge Warner. Representative Liebling, no further questions?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I wasn't tying it to an election issue. I'm just saying, why should we have that age at all? I mean, it just seems to me that we might be, you know, past the need to do that, because but if we're going to have something else, there needs to be some other, I think, actual process by which we can know who's still functional and good without it being an arbitrary age limit. And I'd like to see us get away from an age limit at all and replace it with something that assures the public that that person is still, you know, able to function in what is, after all, a wisdom profession, where longevity should help, not harm, a person's decision-making ability.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Judge Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, all I can say is now that I'm approaching 70 and I'm not there yet, I would note that there are a number of judges who serve after retirement as senior judges and do so quite capably.
Thank you, Judge Thompson.
Thank you.
And Representative Anderson,
so,
closing
Mr.
comment.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for this conversation today. We'd like to continue talking with you and feeling and knowing what your views are on this issue. I think this is an important issue that we need to, as a legislature, be addressing. And just the one issue about retirements, a lot of the judges retire early. There's a quite substantial amount of them that retire early before even the retirement age. And so thank you for this opportunity and hope to have more discussions on this issue.
Thank you, Representative Anderton. To our committee members, ladies and gentlemen, our testifiers and our guests today, thank you for joining us for this informational hearing of the Civil Law and House Judiciary Committees. Thank you for your attention and your questions. We are adjourned.